Today, we're remembering the ongoing inspiration of Ralph Waldo Emerson as we prepare to open the doors of the Emerson House, a new educational center and conversational salon in which our fellowship is launching this week to serve its own members, friends, and neighbors throughout the greater Rogue Valley community. It will offer seminars and discussion groups that connect the core values of spiritual growth, personal renewal, cultural literacy, and social concern. This week, our fall quarter adult religious exploration education begins. Some of the offerings are: what is your spiritual work right now? Connecting the everyday and the sacred. Meditation group. Buddhism class. The whole person in a broken world. Moving freely for life. Please see your insert for more titles and details. Please sign up on the yellow bulletin board in the back or by emailing the leader of the specific program. We now turn our attention to the life, work, and spiritual legacy of Ralph Waldo Emerson. We can only scratch the surface here today, which is why one of the Emerson House offerings is a 10-week series of the Emerson Society. Emerson lived from 1803 to 1882. He was a Unitarian minister who became a famous American lecturer, essayist, poet, and social critic, who led the Transcendentalist movement of the mid-19th century. Current social critic Cornel West describes Emerson as an organic intellectual who embodies the three P's of power, provocation, and personality. Influenced by a combination of Hindu Vedanta, Plato's intuitionism, Montaigne's humanism, Kant's idealism, and Coleridge's romanticism, Emerson was a champion of spiritual principles, self-cultivation, cultural literacy, and social reform. He was an articulate voice for the abolition of slavery and a critic of the prevailing industrial values of materialism and utilitarianism. We'll turn now to our minister, Leslie, and to Rich Lang, team leader for the Emerson House, who is a member of our fellowship after years of being a loyal friend and workshop leader. They will be responding to questions about Emerson and his ongoing inspiration to us as Unitarian Universalists. Reverend Leslie Becknell Marks, a Unitarian Universalist minister, was called to this congregation about 18 months ago and joined us actively just over a year ago in her first settled ministry. We are delighted to have her among us and will be celebrating her installation as our minister on Friday evening, October 14th. Rich Lang, an ordained Presbyterian minister, has spent much of his life engaged in ecumenical interfaith campus ministry. Rich indicates that his theology is globally pluralistic, that he has spent his adult life continually reinventing his beliefs to be simultaneously religious, spiritual, humanistic, and so,
whom he thought was fascinating. And I thought, I like this guy. And then about 2 years ago, I began reading him again, and Julie XL was here, And she had discovered Emerson along with Whitman and Thoreau, or Thoreau as he's supposed to be pronounced, I understand, Thoreau. And we thought, wouldn't it be fun to have a discussion group, a reading circle here at Roof around the writings of the essays and poems of Emerson. So we did that last summer. Some of you may have attended those gatherings. And so at that point I thought, we've got to have an... of this vision for Emerson House was that Emerson, who really transcended the transcendentalist in many ways, I know that sounds odd, but he really did. Harold Bloom says, in one sense, Emerson wasn't a transcendentalist, though he was the lead intellectual in the movement. He was a polymath. He was a man of many turns, of knowledge of many, many kinds. He was just a voracious reader, had a tremendous knowledge of antiquity, and consequently, he wasn't a systematic thinker. Somebody said there's two kinds of thinkers, foxes and hedgehogs. Hedgehogs can know one big thing and they go straight ahead all the time. They're ideological and dogmatic. Foxes are clever and they go off in all kinds of directions and they get where they want to go, but you go, wow, how did they get there? And that's Emerson. He cuts back and forth and you try to follow him and you go, wow, he took me on a journey, but it was like following a fox, not a hedgehog. So that's my introduction to Emerson. I continue to read him with great enjoyment and inspiration.
Leslie.
Well, like Rich, I think that my first exposure to Emerson was maybe junior high, hopefully high school, to give me some chance of understanding the essay on self-reliance, which is not really about individualism at all, although I think that people sort of lift it up as if it is. So I understood it as much as I did and, filed that name away as an important, very smart person to know about. And I'm not even sure when I realized as a lay person, Unitarian Universalist, that he was a Unitarian. I think it was just kind of on those lists of people to be proud of, but didn't really think much about that. And then I went to seminary in New England at Andover Newton Theological School, and one of my favorite UU congregations to attend was the First Parish in Concord. There's a picture of it on their order of service, and that was Emerson's church where he attended, not where he served as minister. So, sort of, walking in the beautiful spaces, swimming in Walden Pond, really being literally, immersed in those spaces had Emerson and his compatriots become much more relevant to me personally. And I really find that some of his ideas about God and the holy and the divine really resonate for me, that, God is not something, some removed and distant, entity, but is, an indwelling source of power and energy available to each of us if we just attend to it and notice. And so those ideas resonate so deeply for me. And then recognizing the importance of Emerson, he is one of those, UU history is filled with these rivers that we're on, and then we diverge in a different direction. And so Emerson was one of those divergent streams that we ultimately kind of all moved in that same direction. So what was radical for him to be saying at the time became much more typical. So he was fighting against a much more staid Unitarian Christianity, but of course now we've come to embrace many more of his ideas. And I think that he can be a guide for each of us as spiritual seekers with many of his spiritual practices and commitments. One of his biographers says, Emerson did not so much look for specific answers to perennial questions as he looked for lines of energy along which he might find enough truth to take his next step. We do not find the truth, he said again and again, so absolute a thing is it. What we find instead is the means to render ignorance transparent through which the truth may one day be glimpsed. So to me that offers a hopeful path forward and has me recognize that I don't have to look outside of Unitarian Universalism for meaningful spiritual practice. that we have this legacy of Emerson and his practices. It's ours.
Thank you. I would wonder, what is the significance of our description of Emerson House as an educational center and conversational salon for the integration of spiritual growth, personal renewal, cultural literacy, and social concern? That's quite a mouthful. What's that all about, Leslie?
So maybe I'll address the educational center and conversational salon, and Rich can talk about the final four values. And recognizing that we've named this this house after Emerson because of the inspiration and his strong encouragement to that there is such benefit in study and in conversation. We heard the opening words lament that there's so little life. So little living and life in a lifetime, but that he really, later in that same journal entry, set out to study a particular truth, read upon it, walk to think upon it, talk of it, write about it. The thing itself will not so much manifest itself, at least not much in accommodation to your studying arrangements. The gleams you get, out they will flash, as likely at dinner or in the roar of Faneuil Hall, as in your painfulest abstraction. So while we might not find that insight in the moment of study in the Emerson House, the study itself is so important. So Emerson really encouraged and himself engaged with the knowledge of others. He really admired Goethe's claim that the greatest genius will never be worth much if he pretends to draw exclusively on his own resources. What is genius but the faculty of seizing and turning to account anything that strikes us? Every one of my writings has been furnished to me by 1,000 different persons, 1,000 different things. So even as the Transcendentalist and Emerson really encourage us to turn inward and to seek that understanding that is available to us internally, that we really need that spark, those ideas that come from outside ourselves and from the wisdom of the ages, whether it's from Emerson or from ages way past. And then the conversational salon, I love that, we learn in together. We learn in speaking with each other. And there's so much opportunity. The Transcendental Club was kind of such a conversation circle that was designed for Frederick Henry Hedge, who was sent off to Maine and ultimately came back to Boston to be the minister in Brookline, where I was the intern minister. So I feel a connection to Hedge. It was called Hedge's Club. So they got together with this idea that to refine their ideas, to discover their ideas was so important. Margaret Fuller, who is so famous for her conversational salons, was part of this circle. And Emerson at one point said, "My chief want in life is somebody who shall make me do what I can do." In groups where debate is earnest, and especially on high questions, the company become aware that the thought rises to an equal level in all bosoms, that all have a spiritual property in what was said as well as the sayer. They all become wiser than they were. So may that be the case for us in the Emerson House.
Thank you. Rich?
I will speak briefly to the four core values that were articulated. Spiritual growth, personal renewal, cultural literacy, and social concern. But before I do, some of you may be interested in knowing more about Ralph Waldo Emerson, and in addition to his essays and poems, this is a wonderful biography called Emerson, The Mind on Fire. Robert Richardson, Jr. is the author, Emerson, The Mind on Fire. It portrays Emerson in a very sympathetic, very human, very empathic way that you might not get from simply reading his essays. You get a sense of his profound relationships and the importance that various colleagues and friends and particularly the role that women played in his life, very profound relationships. So I recommend it. We'll have this book available at the Emerson House. The years I spent in doing interfaith and ecumenical and interfaith campus ministry provided quite an education for me in understanding the minds of young adults. And one of the things I found over the years as I got the privilege of hosting many salons and conversations with young people was that these four pieces of their quest for maturity, for coming into adulthood and shaping their own worldview and value system, all seemed to be pieces that fit together. And then when I read Emerson, I thought, Emerson's been piecing these four things together his whole life. I was really struck by that. But the spiritual, the psychological, the cultural, and the societal elements are four vital elements in the formation of a holistic or integrative spiritual journey. And what will happen is somebody will discover for the first time, wow, I'm on a spiritual journey, or wow, I have a psychological self, or my gosh, there's a whole world of brilliant writers and artists, poets and scientists, creative thinkers out there. That's the cultural. Or there's this whole issue of social justice and human rights and civil rights and the environment and the dignity of all persons. And that becomes their teachable moment when they discover that. What will often happen, I saw this often with young people, was they would discover these in different order. And so each one would be convinced they had found the Rosetta Stone. You know, this was the great truth they'd been looking for their whole lives. I've discovered there's a spiritual dimension to life. Or I've discovered social justice. And they would talk right past each other, you know. Each one going in headlong in the opposite direction. But if you give them enough time, they come back around and they meet. And they go, oh yes, the spiritual, the psychological, the cultural, and the societal are all part of this unity vision of human flourishing. And so that's how it is that those four elements are part of the vision for the Emerson House. If you go into the house, you'll see there are four bookshelves: spiritual growth, personal renewal, cultural literacy, social concern. Okay.
Thank you. Well, okay, so I'm convinced that we're going to be doing youth, young adult, and adult religious exploration. But what makes it religious, Regin?
Yes. Several years ago, I had the pleasure of facilitating a discussion group with some of you, about a dozen of us gathered, and discussed the religious quest in this global age. And those of you who were present may remember, I had four pieces of paper on which were written the words religion, spirituality, humanism, and secularism. And they were sort of spaced at different places around the table. And I invited you to find where you were most comfortable and least comfortable with those four words. And it was very interesting. Some had a very binary approach and said, well, I'm definitely spiritual, but I'm not religious. Or maybe I'm religious, but not spiritual. I don't know. I like the community. Others said, I'm a humanist. That's what I am. Others say, oh, I'm a secular humanist. Others will say, I'm a spiritual humanist. I'm a religious humanist. Humanists seem to be everybody could go with that. But what is intriguing is that the word religion, rather than being treated as oppositional to the secular, the everyday, the ordinary, the earthy, or the spiritual, or the humanistic, might be a piece of the puzzle. We don't have time to read a good definition of the word religion, but it has many dimensions. A religion can encompass any of the world's worldviews, and it has multiple dimensions, including community, including thought and ethics and art and storytelling, narrative, poetry, architecture. Religion is an incredibly complex human phenomenon. I used to enjoy teaching a course on Introduction to World Religions at SOU. And week after week, my students would say, as they would study a new religion each week, this blew my mind. I thought I understood this religion. I had no idea. We live in a time of cultural amnesia, and that is no more true than in the study of religion. Religion is something that most people know very little about and yet assume they have a great deal of knowledge. And so part of the mission of the Emerson House is to deal with the cultural illiteracy, and in particular the religious illiteracy of our culture. But along with that, we also have a lot of psychological illiteracy. We, you know thyself is a pretty good directive. And we have a cultural problem with a lot erasing the historical memory of the past. And for those who have not lived through a social upheaval in their lifetime, they may not be sensitive to the costliness of struggling for a progressive democratic society in which all people have rights and all people have responsibility. So hopefully we can hold those together, that religion, rather than becoming a bugaboo, becomes a word we reinvest with positive meaning in dialogue, so that religion means living as if people mattered.
Thank you. Leslie.
I think that the word religious and religion has been co-opted by a very narrow perspective on that. And I hate to tell you all, but you're religious because you come to this religious institution. But that's good news, because we are religious in a way that Unitarian Universalists are religious. We are religious in this free faith tradition. So there's this, you know, we're not worried about heaven and hell. Those are not the only religious questions. And there's kind of a standard joke that a Unitarian Universalist, given the option, heaven this way, discussion about heaven this way, would go for the discussion. And I think that there's beauty in that, to me, that discussion, those conversations, that is part of our religious work and is part of why the Emerson House is called a conversational salon, that we come together, you know, not limited by predetermined answers or catechisms that we must try to fit ourselves into, but that we can read ancient texts that are full of wisdom that has survived the ages, whether that's the Bible or something written by the Buddha or Confucius, and no one's telling us what it is supposed to mean, but we discover for ourselves, what does this mean for us? Where does this lead us? So that this tradition of free thinking, which of course is so embodied in the person of Emerson, is part of our religious work. And that the Emerson House is religious. It's not another Ollie class, which I think Ollie classes are fabulous. And we have many students and professors of Ollie classes among us. But this is a space where we come really to cultivate ourselves, to seek the deeper meaning, to find the wisdom that is what draws us to be part of this community, and not to be at a coffee house reading the New York Times on Sunday morning or at the ecstatic dance on Sunday mornings, that this is where we find our religious work, and that we discover what it means to be religious as Unitarian Universalists, and that we could share that with the world, that there are other ways to be religious than what we might most often think of. So that is why I think it's our religious work. And particularly in this day and time where there's so much debate and discursiveness and sound bites, that to do the work that requires us to go more deeply into the questions, to listen to each other with respect, to practice right relations with each other, that is our religious work. And that I am so thrilled that Rich has brought his experience and wisdom and those four bookshelves of books and many other things to create this space of the Emerson House, and that we had that space, and that we had so many people willing to refurbish and renew it so that we can engage in this religious work together is really wonderful. So that we can remember that we are religious people in our free faith tradition, this Unitarian Universalism, and that with joy we can claim a growing light, advancing thought, and widening view.